Well, once again, I have the honor of introducing of the next keynote speaker that I got to ask, and he graciously said yes. A little bit about the reason why I chose him is last year he was on the lunch panel, and I thought that I could definitely hear him another 45 minutes. So I thought next year if I get to choose the speakers, he's going to be one of the first people I called, and I did call him, and he said yes right away. I think you're going to be really pleased to hear him, and the 45 minutes is going to go by really fast. So enjoy James as he comes here. He's got, he's got over 2 years, but he was out for 11 and 7 before that, but he's got a wonderful story to tell with that. So I'll let him come on up and tell his story.
Thank you. They told me that. You guys want me to move the podium or stand in front of it? Stand in front of it. Okay. Hi, I'm James, the compulsive overeater. Hi, everybody. We were here last year. I was here last night. Who was here last night? All right. Did you guys enjoy the talent show? Awesome. Well, I'm James. Before I start, somebody once told me when you pitch, there's three pitches. There's the pitch you thought about before you got up, the pitch you gave, and then the stuff you forgot to say when you came off the stage. So you're going to get something. I don't know exactly what you're going to get. Let me qualify. I think I just looked. Was it 826 days, something like that? 826 days abstinent this time. Giving away 170 pounds. I'm a food inventory and step sponsor. My sponsor's not here, but somebody I sponsored a long time ago is here, and he's now ahead of me. Where do I begin? Knowing a new freedom is our theme for tonight. And I was thinking about that. I've been thinking about that ever since I was asked to speak, and I knew what the theme was. And let me, just for those of you who don't know me, I'll go back kind of and try to, since I have 45 minutes, I'll talk about what I was like. And I'm one of those people that I'm a one-ism person. Food has just been my thing. I never got into any controlled substances or liquids or anything else, alcohol, drugs, none of that stuff. But food, I came out of the womb running, and I was born 10.2 pounds and was immediately put on a diet. Literally, I could not drink my mother's own milk. I was like, you guys are familiar with the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, or like the Michelin Man. They used to call me Roly Poly, and I look at my baby pictures, and literally I had little, you know, folds all around my body because it was just the fat of a big child. So to this day, I don't know what a normal body feels like because I've never experienced. It's like when you're born blind, you never could see, so. You know, I just can't experience what, even though my body is smaller, I still walk in the world with the mind of an overweight person. And I notice things that most skinny people don't notice, you know. I had a relatively healthy household growing up. I have two older brothers. We're all 1 year apart, so we're almost like triplets. I'm the youngest of three boys. My dad is from Kenya, very much like Obama. We have those dads from Kenya, those Kenyan dads, man. and he left quite early in my childhood, so I've inventoried that, and he's since passed away, but there was some stuff in there when I inventoried that years ago. And my mom, this wonderful woman, raised three boys on her own, and... You know, we all have college degrees. We're all, you know, out of trouble and have families and, you know, are decent contributing members of society. And all of that happened even though we were a four-person household. You know, it was three boys and my mom. Three of us were compulsive overeaters. And my middle brother, the one in the middle, I'm the youngest. Me and the oldest are the big guys, heavy. My middle brother was premature. He was born 8.8 pounds. And he somehow, because of that, we call that, must have been he didn't get done in the oven. So he managed to be like an Adonis. Like, he was always muscular and slim and had no fat on his body. So we were the youngest two, we had to always share a bedroom. So I grew up in a house where I always had to look at the opposite of me physically. And he seemed to live the perfect life. Like, he always knew how to put the food down at the end of the meal. Like, he had an end of a meal. We didn't have an end of a meal. Me and my oldest brother, everybody would leave and go watch TV, and then we'd sneak out. And then we'd come back during the commercials when everybody's paying attention. And then we'd go back during the show and go in the fridge. And as you can see, I'm kind of tall, so we learned. I mean, by the time I was probably 12 or 13, I could see over the refrigerator. My mom is short, and she would hide stuff on the refrigerator. And it was always at my eye level. And, I mean, the games began. And I mean, we played many food games. A typical thing we did when we got into, like, grade school, we went from private school education to public school. That was when the magnet program started. And shortly thereafter, my middle brother, ironically, the slim one, he figured out that if you take the application for food stamps, and meal tickets, basically, that they give kids in school, they just ask you questions, and based on those questions, you're granted tickets for lunch, nutrition, and lunch. And he figured out that the qualifier was how much money do your parents make, and it said on there, must make less than X amount of money, whatever it was. So he just put, like, a reasonable amount under that, even though my mom made way more than that, and they gave us lunch tickets. So he came home, and he was like, dude, they gave me a book of lunch tickets. And we're like, how'd you get those? You know, me and the oldest brother, we're like, you figured out how to get more food? So, you know, he figured it out. So we filled out our little cards, and we turned them in. And the Soombi, you know, I was going to say the Soombi boys, that's my last name. We figured out how to get our lunch tickets, and we were off and running. And we didn't tell my mom, so she still gave us money for lunch and nutrition. And we had our lunch tickets. So we would eat lunch at school and nutrition at school, and then we would pool our money, and there was this market before the Ralphs were around. There was a Hughes market, if people LA know, and there was a Fazio's market. Anybody remember these markets? I'm going back a ways. There was one right around the corner from our house. We would literally be like 6th, 7th, 8th grade kids in the supermarket with a shopping cart with $6 between us, $2 a piece. And we figured out how to shop and get a meal every day after school. Me and my brothers, we had our backpacks, a shopping cart, and we would assemble a meal. And then we would eat it and get rid of the evidence before my mom came home and she would make dinner. And we'd eat dinner. And like that was every day in my house. Every day of my grade school. We never, till I was an adult, we didn't tell my mom that we lied to the county and, you know, got lunch tickets. And I guess I kind of made an amends, by sending my daughter to private school but still donating money to my local public school. So that was sort of an amends I made there, at least in my head. Anyway. So, I mean, that's kind of what I was like. Like, everything evolved around how do I get more food. And the only requirement that my mom had for us, she was an educator and became an administrative librarian. Her thing was get an education. If you get an education, you can go wherever you want to go and do whatever you want to do. And that was the most important thing in our house. So we were consequently good students, but we ate. And we ate and we ate and we ate. And mom provided and provided. And because she was in her disease as well, for whatever reason she had, she provided because she wanted to eat too. So we just ate together. And, you know, we very often ate up my mom's food. And then looking back and inventorying, I recall the things, the compulsive eater habits my mom had that I developed. She used to hide food from us in her car, and then we figured out how to get into her trunk through the back seat, removing screws out of, like, she'd leave us in the car. That was back when you could leave a kid in the car without people calling the police. So she would go into the market and leave us in the car, and we could, like, know that there was stuff in the trunk. So we figured out how to unlatch the back seat, crawl into the trunk, get the food, come out. And, you know, she would hide stuff on the refrigerator, like I said. My mom used to bake. And, you know, Hershey's has this tin thing that's unsweetened, but it looks just like, and it smells like the stuff we want, but it's unsweetened. I remember once grabbing that, and I just took a big spoonful, like it smelled right, and it was like eating chalk. And the logical thing would be to spit it out, right? But if you're thinking, if you know where I'm going, to the sugar drawer. And put sugar in there and mix it in your mouth with some saliva. Anybody? That was my life. Like, I can't remember moments of doing my homework. I can't remember papers I wrote in school. I mean, I was a straight-A student. I can't remember most of my education up to college. But I remember the moments of the devious nature of my disease and how I thought about how do I acquire. It was like I saw this documentary, and it was about inmates in prison. And they said, this is why the guards will never win, because the inmate is there 24 hours a day, and 24 hours a day he's figuring out how to screw the guards. And the guard goes home after 8 hours and relaxes. And, like, the disease is like those inmates, and I'm the warden. Like, I'm screwed. The disease is constantly like, you know, I was just sharing a second ago, before I came back, my job, we have this confectionery in our lunchroom. I would sit on break, you know, and I work for a police department, so, you know, our breaks are, you know, very regimented. We have to be back at certain times. I would let everybody leave the room off of the break that was on the same break I was on, and I'd be a couple minutes late back to my station so I could hang back and let them go and then grab a few things and put them in my pocket and put my money and then, you know, go like I was in the bathroom or something. You know, like all those kind of, I would sneak eat and then eat in public, or I wouldn't eat and people would think, like, you never eat, James. I never see you eat. How are you 345 pounds? You know. I don't know. I'm big boned. Anybody know big boned people in here? It's my big boned people. I'm going all over the place, but I never brought these out, but I saved them. This is my pants, so you have a picture. It's now a tent for my daughter, where am I now? I'm giving you guys just this picture of like how my mind goes, and that was where I was all the time. Like, I have fondness when I look back at like when 99 cent menus came out, when 2-for-1s came out. The first time I went to a buffet eating establishment, like, I remember I had to be maybe 12 or 13. We took a cross-country trip, me, my two brothers, my mom, and my grandmother in a 4-door Toyota Corolla. We drove to Washington, D.C. from L.A. I'm born and raised in L.A. I have cousins in Washington, D.C. So we drove state to state. My mom went to AAA and got the maps, you know, and literally we it was almost like, you know, we did like a Howard Johnson's tour. We ate like every Howard Johnson's between here and there. And I ordered the same meal, the same unabsent meal every day. And it was just like, that was my favorite vacation, because I got to eat out every meal as a kid. Like, I'm from the era where like you didn't eat out. Like, you hated your mom's food. Like, I don't want mom's, I want McDonald's, you know. I was that kind of generation. So to get to eat out every day, bad food, every meal, was like, that was the trip. I didn't care about seeing my cousins in D.C. I didn't care about the Washington Monument and all that stuff. Howard Johnson. Where's the next Howard Johnson? So, you know, that's the life I led. I came to, you know, high school. When I walked in the door in high school, I share the story that because we're in line, me and my brothers are 1 year apart, my two brothers went into that same high school before I got there. So everybody kind of knew I was coming. I followed behind them. And by this time, as you can see, I'm tall. I'm 6'4". So I was basically 6'3" by the time I got to high school. The coach unsuccessfully recruited my brother to play football, my oldest brother. My middle brother played like volleyball. He played skinny people sports like basketball and volleyball. But my oldest brother, he literally was like the biggest kid on the campus. You know, he was over 6 feet tall and definitely over 300 pounds because we were almost like mirrors of each other, and he was 2 years older, so he was even that much bigger than me. And the coach unsuccessfully recruited him to play for the football team. So I don't know what happened, but I believe to this day that my brother told the coach, leave me alone, and I will sacrifice a lamb before you. I will give you my youngest brother. So my first day, anybody know the embarrassment of, like, your mom driving you in her corny little car to the first day of school in high school, and you're trying to make new friends, and you don't know anybody? I get there. I get out of the curb of my mom's little import car. And the coach and several players of the football team were at the front door. And they're like, James! And I was like, yeah. And they're like, come with us. And they literally toured me around the school like a recruit or something, you know. And I'd never played organized sports at that point. You know, I was just a big guy. I was bigger than the coach in high school. And he tried to recruit me to play football, you know. It was kind of like the blind side, one of those kind of moments, you know, like this, the oafish big guy, and the coach is like, we'll take care of you, boy. Come on and play with us. And I didn't play my first year of high school. I managed to keep him at bay with a stick. I don't want to play. I just want to be invisible and eat and have nutrition and lunch and scam the county. I don't want to play football. I want to keep doing what I'm doing. I'm good. We got this lunch ticket program happening. Don't worry about it. And by the time I got to my second year, I kind of just broke down. I just, you know, being hounded over and over. I said, okay, I'll play. I'll go out. I'll play. So that was the first time I weighed on a real scale. And before that time, you know, we had one of those scales in the bathroom that everybody generally has, those little flat ones. I would get on it. My mom could weigh on it. My middle brother could weigh on it. When me and my oldest brother got on it, it spun around and stopped because it went to 260, and then it pinned itself. Like I was on the ground, and there was no more spinning it could do. It would just go, bam, I'm 260, baby. That's right. So I was on 260 until I got to football. And I had to go to Kaiser. My mom had Kaiser insurance. She worked for the county. And I got like my first physical, turn your head, cough, the whole thing. And I got on the scale and the guy's doing the, you know, clink, clink. He's moving them and clink, moving. And he's like 325 pounds. And I'm in high school. Frame of reference here. Anybody remember William the Refrigerator Perry? Remember him? Biggest guy in the NFL? 6'3", 325 pounds. I was that in high school as a junior. So I'm like, okay, let's roll with it. So to my chagrin, like, I bring that news back to coach, and his eyes were like, boom. Like, where can we need to post this everywhere so that, like, the other teams see it. Like, they need to know we have a man on the football field. Like, so he used to make me get off the bus first when we would go to visiting schools. You know, and like we had a weight room, and our weight room was the locker room for the visiting team. So, you know, we'd lift weights and we put how much weight, our maximum weight list, we painted up on the walls. So all this was intended to intimidate the other team. Like this, oh my God, he can bench press 400 pounds. Like, so they would see me get off the bus and, you know, I wore like three XXX pants and like I was wearing men clothes. I mean, it wasn't big enough to fit on my head. Like, so I had to order special uniforms. And I looked at video footage, and it literally looked like a man was playing with boys. Like, we used to measure. I was an offensive lineman. I was very slow, too. 325 pounds is very slow. Very slow. Unless you're an NFL athlete, and I'm nowhere near that. But I, you know, like, coach was always like, you can't teach height, and you can't teach weight. You can't teach that. Like, you can teach fundamentals. You know, so I would go out there, and we would do what's called pancaking, where you basically lay on a person until they're flat. And that was my special move, you know. I would line up on a kid. 34 smash, right? You know, like, and I was the four hole, so when the four, you hit a four, he's coming behind James. Okay. 34 smash, right? And I'm a smash, right? And and a kid would be under me, kind of that. And all that to say, like, football, I later realized in inventorying that, it was kind of a relief. I had a lot of anger in me, but I was the kind of person, the anger was inside and in my head and negative thinking was there, but in front of everybody, I was like everybody's friend. I was like the teddy bear. That term, teddy bear, was me. Like, I was everybody's friend. I never got bullied, and I never bullied anybody. I was just, I'm going to get James to beat you up. Like, kids would say that. Like, my friends would say that. Like, I was just this tool. I was like an ogre. Like, ugh. I'm going to get James to mess with you. You know, they'd say something and stand behind me and be like, what? What? You know. So I became that, and I kind of, like, took that protective kind of role with my friends and, you know. And then when I got indoctrinated to the football team, we were kind of like a gang. I mean, you kind of take on your brethren. And so there was a lot of anger that I just unleashed on other people, other kids smaller than myself. It was really cowardly to take my weight and put it on. You know, I would see a kid across sometimes. We'd go play a valley school or something, and they'd be like, you know, like you could see they were shook in their eyes. Like, and I'd be like, line them up. You know, pancake time. So... but anyway, the negative of football was that, you know, you have to, like, exercise. And you have to run. And you have to show up on time. And you have to, like, you know. And that coupled with the fact that my mom was completely opposed. My mom's an educator, so she thought, they just treat you like a piece. She basically knew the truth. They're treating you like a piece of meat out there. I don't want you to get all these injuries. I read the paper. I know, da da da. So my mom didn't support me. My dad wasn't in the picture. My brothers were off in college. So, you know, I was me on my own playing football with nobody driving me to games, nobody caring except for the coach. So when that experiment was done and college was coming around, because I lived in a house of education, so I had to go to college or get out. I had that speech my mom told me, you're going to college or you're getting out. The coach was like, oh, you're going to play college ball. Look, James, I have all these letters. I've been sending your videos around, and coaches want you. And I was like, I didn't ask you to do that. And it was like, I didn't want any more. I didn't want, I was people-pleasing. I didn't want to play football. You know what I mean? I was tired of four-hour practices. I wanted to just go back in the shell and eat and get my county lunch tickets and go back to that line. I didn't want attention. I was the kind of guy that, like, you know, when you play football and I became a captain and people would ask you for your, like, your jersey, girls and stuff. I had so much body shame. I didn't want somebody to be walking around with my number. Like, that would make me feel like that was the insecurity going on in my head. Like, I was not the jock. Like, we had a quarterback. He was the jock. He was like the playboy. I was like the, yo, man, can I lift this car for you? What do you need me to do? Like, you need us to move some people? You know, like, so I was the muscle, and they were doing all, you know what I mean? And they enjoyed the fruits of it, and I was just in a shell. Like, I was this, I didn't want to, here's one big thing of shame. I really took a long time to get over it. I had this body shame because I was flabby, and I had, like, the man boob kind of thing going on, and that brings an immense amount of insecurity. And, you know, there's showers. Like, that was the doo-doo-doo in my life. How do I avoid the showers? So I used to literally practice for 4 hours. Imagine a 325-pound, 6-foot person playing football for 4 hours and then not taking a shower, going home. I mean, like, you know when you look off into an oasis and you see, like, the blurry lines? Like, that's the fumes that probably came off my body when I walked in the door. My mom would be like, she would have, like, that onion tears. You know, like, but I, for the life of me, would not disrobe in front of another human being. But, like, for dear life. And I remember one day, this is where it came out. The coach one day, after practice, you know, we huddle up and we do these little chants and stuff. He said, today, we're hearing some reports and there's some hygiene issues going on here. Everybody is taking a shower today. And he literally, he just said that, and this was at the start of practice, actually. He said, this is going to happen. Everybody's taking it back. I was so furious. Like, it was like he was talking to me, but he said it to the whole team. You know, we're all taking a knee. I had the most furious practice. I think I gave a kid a concussion. I broke my face mask because I headbutted a kid and my face mask broke off. Like, I was playing in rage that day. And the coach was like, you know, he was like, yeah, get in there, boy. That's what, you know, like he applauded it, but it was fury. I was playing with like this fury. And then when practice ended, I ran faster than the wide receivers, the fastest guys on the team, to the locker room, disrobed and showered in like 60 seconds. Like literally before the next boy's foot hit the locker room, I was wet in like five towels, like pulling my pants on under my towels. Like I was dressing like, you know, how a woman who's nude dresses, you know, you're pulling your pants up under the towel and putting a shirt on, going in through the wrong hole of the shirt, you know. And I was like, and it was such shame in that moment. Like I was hiding. Like there were other big guys on the team. I was the biggest guy on the team, but there were big guys on the team. And they'd be out there bellies hanging out and half nude and didn't care. I had an issue with my body consciousness. Like I was not comfortable with this, you know. And that, you know, that bugged me. That was like my Achilles heel. Like this, if somebody was going to expose that about me, you would have ripped me to the core. You know, like if I had to stand in front of like a group like this and be naked, I literally would just die. Just, you know. So I mean, I carried that. So I didn't play football after high school. Disappointed everybody. I went to junior college. Even disappointed my mom. She wanted me to go to university. And I was a scholar athlete. Like I got offers from or invitations from a lot of schools and stuff. But I didn't want limelight. I didn't want to do other people's stuff anymore. I was just done. I was done. And so how did I get here? I'm looking over at my I ended up, several things happened in transpired. I ended up working in the entertainment industry for a woman who was abstinent in AA. She was sober for several years, and she introduced me to this program. And, you know, I came in, I was young, I was 24, I think, 23 or 24, and I just did what I was told. I was good at doing what I'm told, and I just did what I was told, and it worked. And I'll spare you all that, but I basically, you know, do what your sponsor tells you to do, 30 days. You will get the results. It happens. You answer the questions. Even if you're answering just to go through the motions, eventually something will come. You'll start writing truth, you know. And I did. I lost 120 pounds. I, you know, was food inventory set maintenance. I would speak anywhere. Did the fashion show back then. And it was 2000, my daughter was born. And let me tell you about promises, because that's a big thing. Today I go for the carrot and not the stick. The disease is like the stick. If you're compulsively eating, it's like getting hit with a stick, and you keep taking that hit until it hurts, and you can't take it anymore, and then you come in these rooms. And that's kind of how I was. Like I tried my homemade diets, and I tried, you know, I was too ashamed to walk into like a Jenny Craig or something, because I thought that was for women. And there weren't many programs for men, you know. Jenny Craig and Weight Watchers and all this chic and all that stuff. It seemed like it was for women. They never advertised it to men. They do today now, but they didn't back in the day. So I would do things like just stop eating, and then that would last till like 11 o'clock in the morning. I remember when I was in the football, there was Herschel Walker was a famous running back. They were like, he goes to Jack in the Box and eats one meal a day. I tried that, but my one meal was like seven of their number ones, and like that didn't work. So, you know, getting this program introduced to me and this, you know, a program of discipline and structure. What would we say? A discipline and structured approach is how this program outlines itself. I've come to learn today that that's a choice. Like, this isn't the answer for everybody. Some people, Weight Watchers works. Some people, diet centers work. And, you know, there are some people who have surgery and it works. Some people. But for me, I can see none of that will work, because I need this disciplined and structured approach, because it almost accounts for every minute of my time. Like, every minute of my time, I'm not supposed to be thinking about me. I'm supposed to be thinking about you guys and all the people I come into, you know, into contact with out in the world. So going back, I got the promises I got in this program the first time I came in. I was in the program for about 7-8 years. See, I finished college, I got a career, I got married, had a beautiful daughter, and bought a house, all in this program. And then having all those promises, I thought I got this, and I kind of walked away. Like I was on autopilot after a while, you know, I was a secretary of a couple meetings. And when my daughter came in 2000, my focus shifted to her, and it was like, okay, now the responsible thing is to take care of your child. I can't be going out at 7:30 meetings on Mondays and Wednesdays. I can't do that anymore because my daughter has irregular sleep hours. She's just an infant. She needs to be protected and taken care of. And what I didn't realize is that thing they tell you on a plane that, you know, when you lose oxygen in the cabin, put yours on first before you address the child, because you could pass out and then the kid's going to pass out too. And that's exactly what happened. I put hers on and I passed out. And I parented without Hal for 11 years, you know. And what that looks like is, it's painful when I look at it now. I mean, I would get resentful at my daughter for being up late so I couldn't binge. Like, I would try to send her to bed early. I was just sharing how I used to sneak out of my house to go on food runs in the middle of the night. And I have a detached garage. I own a duplex, and I have a detached garage. I would push my car out of the garage into the alley without turning it on so they couldn't hear it, and I'd push it down the alley away, and then I would start it and go on my little journey, and then I'd come back. And now I live in it. My house was built in 1930, so it's got hardwood floors. And I've figured out how to navigate that minefield. I have gone to the point of belly crawling like in the army. Forearm over forearm to sneak into my own house. I'm sneaking in my own house. I'm sneaking out of bed. My wife will fall asleep with her arm across me, and so I do like the butt curl out of the bed and down onto the floor and sneak out of the room and push the car out the alley and down the block. And like, you know, and I live in South LA, like, you know, ain't nothing but bass heads out at that time of night. There's nothing good going on at 2 o'clock in the morning. Anywhere in the city, really. I mean, and I've been all over the city. I've driven to Hollywood in the middle of the night because there's a few restaurants in Hollywood. There's some restaurants on Melrose. I'm familiar. And that's before Yelp. Like, now I'm like, man, I could, like, Yelp. What's open now? But, you know, that was before that, you know. And so, how did I come back? This is a miracle. You guys may see it. I see it as a miracle. I was pretty agnostic. I was agnostic. There's no pretty agnostic. I was kind of pregnant. No, I was agnostic. And my daughter, who visits her grandmother, my wife's mother, regularly, is Catholic. And so she would take my daughter to church whenever she stayed over there. So my daughter developed this, you know, affection for the Catholic Church and being Catholic. And one day, well, I think she was like maybe 6 or so, she was like, I want to be baptized. I was like, well, go talk to your mom because I don't know anything about that. So, and my wife went to Catholic school, so she was kind of raised Catholic but left the faith when she went to college and so forth. So my daughter went and took catechism classes. This is all her self, you know, sponsored and self-driven. And she took 2 years of catechism classes and did all the requirements, jumped through all the hoops required to be baptized and taken into the church. And so obviously that day comes when it's time for your baptism. And me, as the blood father, needs to show up at that baptism, even though I'm not of that faith. And so I show up, all 300, probably over 40 pounds at this time. And this is 2 years ago. So I show up at the church. The ceremony is beautiful. I bring my, you know, camera. I have this special camera, and I'm taking hundreds of photos, doing the dad thing. It was wonderful. It's over. And there's a meet and greet after, and the bass player for the band, the band at the church, is a guy I sponsored 11 years before, and he comes across the room like a beeline. And he's like, James, what's up? And mind you, I abandoned him. Like, he was one of the people I left behind when I just drifted away. I can't even remember how I, like, I just remember it stopped answering his calls or something. It just faded or something. And so he comes to my room, like, he never missed a day, and he's like, James, how's it going? When are you going to a meeting? That was the second thing he said to me, right? Now, preceding that, my mom had died a couple years prior to me coming back, too, so I was thinking about how. It was in my head, like, I need to lose some weight. My mom died of this disease. She died at 74, which is way too young. And I saw myself on that path. My grandmother died at 94, my mom at 74, so I extrapolated that I would die at 54, take 20 more years off, because I eat 10 times worse than my mom eats. And so I was thinking about mortality, and I was like, oh, I just don't feel good. I'm good, you know. And he comes across the room in this moment of clarity, and he says, James, when are you going to a meeting? Like, that's the second thing that came out of his mouth. Like, that's like a how dare you question you would ask somebody who you can completely see is not asking it. You know what I mean? Like, I should have just lost it and, like, smacked him. Like, crazy. But my answer was Monday. And I came Monday, and this is 820-some days later. Let me check my time over there. I'll keep talking. Oh, awesome. Sweet. I can talk a little bit. Okay. I'll do that. You ready for tomorrow? No, I'm kidding. today, what I try to do, I remember what I did over those 8 years when I was abstinent and, you know, my ego told me I was like Mr. C.A. Howe because I had lost 120 pounds and I was food inventory stepping man. Like, I wore that, like, you know, I worked for, like, the police department and we're big on, like, bars and stars and badges and shit. Because it, like, tells people before you walk in the room, I'm a badass. Like, I'm FISM, baby. You see my badge? What does it say? Oh, you new booty. You just food. Talk to the hand, man. And don't be messing with those grains, homie. Don't mess with the grains. Stop. You like measure people by what they can eat on the plan. Like, oh, you can't have this? Oh, I feel for you, man. You know, I feel for you. This is maintenance right here. You know, like, that's the sickness. You know what I mean? Like, that's where my head is. But, you know, I remember the arrogance I had. And I remember the games. Like, the disease is just, like I said, it's like that inmate and I'm the warden. It's like, all right, James is kind of tough here. He's been asking him for a few years, so it's just kind of pacing, like, wait a minute. He likes to go to Starbucks, and he likes that stuff that says sugar-free. Okay. I'm going to throw sugar-free on something that he used to love. And he'll be like, how can I make that abstinent? And he'll obsess about how to make that abstinent, that thing that says sugar-free. And sure enough, like, I slowly started accepting things. I was on grains. All of a sudden, if it was brown, it was whole grain. I don't know if anybody has gradually gone there, like where you gradually start slipping. You really are slipping the minute you ate the first one, but in my head, I'm like, yeah, it's not that bad. It's brown. It's got to be whole grain, right? Or the light menu. You equate light with abstinence. It's on the light menu. I'm like in a place like, does Denny's really have anything abstinent? Like, what am I doing in here? It says light. You know, you feel me? You guys know these menus, man. And they're like, they're not talking to us. They're talking to them people out there who are sleeping in their beds in this hotel right now. They're not talking to us. Because nothing on some of those menus is abstinent. Like, I would be in, like, you know, and now they got, you know, I call it, you guys, the food network? It's like the food porn network, you guys, like where you just stare at it and rub your belly like all day. And they play seductive music. I would find myself just staring at, like watching the preparation of stuff and like, and slowly, I wake up. When I wake up, I'm neck deep in it. I'm accepting everything. I'm past brown. Now it's just like, well, it's the same manufacturer of the brown stuff. You know what I mean? Like, And so I remember those things now, because that's where I was in that last probably year of my abstinence. I was claiming schism. I wasn't making phone calls. I wasn't doing reading and writing. I wasn't inventorying every day before I go to bed and when I wake up in the morning. I ceased writing my food down because I memorized what to say to my sponsor. I hope I'm not throwing stones in here. I mean, some people are ducking and stuff. But all these tricks, I used, you know, like, I don't got to write it no more. I used to have this notebook, and it had, like, I literally filled, like, half of a single-space collegiate notebook with my food every day. I was like, it's the same thing. I keep saying, so pretty much I could just get on the phone and say it. It was like I recited it. I memorized it, you know. But there's something to putting the pen to the paper and committing it. It's like in stone. It's like, you wrote that. So then when I'm standing somewhere, I'd be like, I can't order that. I didn't say that. Now I'm telling a lie. And I either got to admit that lie or not lie in front and eat what I'm supposed to eat. You know. And the reality is I shouldn't be thinking about food. That's the disease. Like, you committed it, so you're supposed to forget about it. It's already done. You just eat. There shouldn't be a choice anymore. I shouldn't have to look at the menu. I already wrote the menu. So I've this time become way more pragmatic. There is no art to my food plan. Everything I write on the paper and say to my sponsor is on that black and white piece of paper in the forever abstinent thing. And, you know, I almost have turned my obsession against the disease. So I obsess about being, I eat the exact same thing every day, every meal. And that's just how I roll. It makes it easy for me. And then literally, I don't think about food anymore. I even thought about the anxiety of coming in rooms like this where they prepare the food for you, but you don't know what it is. Because then I'd be like, will I like it? Is it going to be good? And then, you know, and then you people who know when you're binging and you thinking about a meal and you go have that meal and it disappoints, and even though you ate it all the way to the last and licking the wrapper, you still need another meal that's going to be satisfactory. Like, I just ate a meal. I just completed it. Like, I'm one of those people that would eat the whole thing and then go to the counter and complain that it wasn't good. And they'd be like, well, where is it? And I'm like, it's in here, but you need to make me something else. So, like, that's how I am in abstinence, too. Like, if I don't eat what I know is going to be good, I'm anxious because I don't know what I'm going to have. So I just make it. I make a week's worth of food in advance. I know what I'm going to have next Thursday because it's in the refrigerator already. And I'm going to write it Thursday morning, and then I'm going to just pull it out and eat it. Very simple. Pragmatic. It's not pretty. It's not fancy. But that's just how I have to roll today. And the rest of the program is the same way. You know, we say progress and not perfection. But there's a reason that seven tools, the first one is abstinence. Because without that, there is no clarity. It's like, oh, I'm in AA. I just drink every now and then. Okay. You know, you can't work on yourself when you're not clear. And that clearing is kind of taking toxins out of the body first. So, you know, detox and then start working, you know. I was going to go through my little acronym thing. I shared it at the last year on the panel. My ALT-MAS, you guys remember the ALT-MAS speech? Is anybody here last year? ALT-MAS, the seven tools, abstinence, literature, writing, telephone calls, meetings, anonymity, service, sponsorship. That's the way it's written on the paper, and it spells ALT-MAS, ALTMASS. I was like, acronym, awesome, ALT-MAS. It's easy for me to every day, like, I was abstinent today. Literature writing, I asked a question. Sometimes I don't ask a question, and I'm like, I should have wrote. You know, telephone calls. I'm not the best at it, but try to talk and call somebody. Meetings, I go to, you know, the meetings, 3 a week we're supposed to hit. Anonymity, I don't talk about other people's business. Service, I, you know, have positions at meetings. I came here today when I'm asked. I try to show up. And sponsorship, I have a sponsee. So that is important. And those are, like, they call them tools. I kind of treat them like weapons because, like I said, the inmate is out there and 24 hours a day. So when you're sleeping, the disease is doing stuff in your head, you know. Knowing a new freedom, that's the theme tonight, to circle back. And I've realized that there is a freedom that comes from, you know, some of these promises that come in the program. There's a freedom that comes when you're, you know, I remember the bondage of my body, what my body used to, the bondage used to put me in. I couldn't fit in cars. I couldn't fit in public seats. I couldn't fit at my desk at work. I couldn't breathe when I walked upstairs. I could, like, so I avoided opportunities because I could foresee something's going to be a challenge for the shell I was in. But now that my body has healed a bit, now there's some responsibility. So freedom brings responsibility. And that's kind of what they don't tell you going in. But what you learn about that responsibility is it's a lot better. It's like a good problem. You know, somebody once said in here, you can measure the quality of your life by the quality of your problems. I used to have problems like, oh God, I hope they don't call on me because I'll have to stand up and I'll be ashamed. Now it's like, oh, like this is, and this happened like about a year ago, year and a half ago. Oh God, we're going to have to figure out what hotel is because my wife got invited to Prague in the Czech Republic for work and I get to travel for free. I get to go on a trip around the world for free. And I wasn't thinking about plane seats. I wasn't thinking about not sitting in a taxi. It was just like, I had the responsibility of figuring out how to be abstinent in, you know, Eastern Europe. And it can be done. It can be done. I went to Hawaii last Thanksgiving. I got a microwave in my room, and I shipped from Amazon my cooking utensils to a cousin's house over there and prepared a week's worth of food over there and put it in my minibar fridge in the hotel. So I had a microwave in the minibar fridge, and we were around the corner from a Safeway. Like, you can be absent anywhere. I was absent in Eastern Europe. And, you know, I had my, I was just showing, I have this iTranslate app. And I stood there in the market. They have a market that looks very much like a Ralph's or any market here. And I'm reading the back of cans of vegetables. And I figured out the Czech word for sugar. I typed it in my translator. And then I just looked at the cans. 1, 2, 3, 4. Bam. Good. I filled up a week's worth of that. Week's worth of vegetables. Had them. I came into the hotel room and the minibar fridge was broken. It was actually hot. So I had them come and replace it. And then they started coming with the alcohol. Like, oh, sir, you know, they don't speak English. So that, you know, this the housekeeper and they're trying to put stuff in. I was like, no. And she's like, you know, showing me bottles of alcohol. And I was like, I need the fridge. And I put my stuff in the fridge. And she was just looking at me like, Americans, and African-American. I didn't want to go there, but I was the only black guy in the country. Anybody ever? Prague, Czech Republic. But it worked. I was abstinent. I came back feeling great. Everybody else was like, oh, all that heavy Czech food. And I was like, you know, hey, let's go for a walk to the castle. And they're all like, ugh. It was a wonderful trip. Like, there's the blessings of this program are amazing, like the clarity. And let me leave you with this because I have a couple minutes. I'm in my maintenance questions, and I think it was like the second or third question that came up, and it was to read some chapters from Search for Serenity. And I had never made the connection, but this chapter was all about the connection between your emotional and mental well-being and your physical well-being, and they're not separate. They work together. Like, there's this synthesis happening in your body, this beautiful ballet, if you will, of your mind and your body working together. And so they talked about how when a baby is born and a baby's healthy and you just lay it down, a baby will like coo and be happy because they're happy in their skin and their body. And I equated that to like when I first got abstinent and lost quite a bit of weight. I felt good because for the first time I wasn't lugging around 170 extra pounds. So I felt, that was like the honeymoon. We talk about the honeymoon in here when you first get abstinent and lose some weight, your belt fits. And like, but that only lasts for a little while because the negative thinking comes back. And when the negative thinking comes back, tension comes back. And pressure comes back, and strain comes back. And it talked about how in that chapter it talked about how your muscles fight each other. Like you could have two conflicting emotions. I could go, like for instance, my daughter's getting baptized. Here's a conflicting emotion. I was proud of my daughter and I was happy that she was taking this big step in her life, but I was ashamed of myself in my own. So all of that is happening in my head. So my body's fighting itself. And when it's fighting itself, it's killing itself. And I was like, wow, that's like a deep concept, because for 42 years, I've been killing myself. I've been fighting inside. Like, I've had mixed emotion all the time in my life. And so I'm now working to get that ballet back in order where everything, you know, that's what all these questions, I don't know if you people are like me and you hate, like, the questions don't stop in this program. Like, I don't know who writes them. Is Ray up in it? Ray, do you write those? You're like Stephen King up in here. You'd be writing some questions. Prolific. I'm doing them. But, man, I was like, I'm reading some of these questions, and I was like, what? You know, but you guys know the what questions I'm talking about, you know. The adulthood, you know, your inventory, some of that. Ray, seriously? but, you know, all of that is trying to get this right, because negative thinking is a large part of our disease. It doesn't say food is a large part of our disease. That's just the label we have, because that's the effect of the cause, negative thinking. We spend all our time thinking about effects when we need to get to the cause, right? So if you can get the effect out of the way, eat the food plan and then leave it, get that out of the way, and let's start dealing with the cause. And then we can all go somewhere, right? And so, you know, that's what I try to impart to people, because they're like, James, when am I going to be able to put on these pair of pants? I've had a sponsee. I've talked to a sponsor in the first call, and they're like, what do you do? How do you eat? And we spent 45 minutes talking about food, and I was like, then I point the mirror back at him, and I'm like, do you see the obsession? I'm like, look at the clock. When did you call me? This is obsession. We're in it right now. You spent 45 minutes arguing about the food plan and how that's not acceptable. This is obsession. This is your disease staring you in the face. Get that out of the way, and then we can start dealing with why you need to focus on what's wrong with the food plan, you know? So today, I try to focus my energy there. I don't focus my energy on the gym. I don't focus my energy on my food. I'm not trying to make the how version of my favorite fast food. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Where you try to find an alternative, a how alternative. Can I make this in how? Like, I'll spend like a week on that. I'll be like a chemist mixing up, like, I can make Duncan Hines in how? You know? Don't focus on that. That's your obsession. That's your obsession. That's the disease out there working you. It's working you. If you're eating close to what you ate when you're out there, that means you're close to being out there. You feel me? So eat what you're supposed to eat on the paper that looks boring and challenging. You know, you can make it taste good, but eat what's on the paper. Don't try to add things to the paper. Don't try to, like, look between the paper. The back of the paper. It's on the paper. If it's not on the paper, leave it. If there's a question, I tell people, if you have a question about it, it's probably not okay. I never ask a question about a vegetable. Has anybody ever asked a question about, can I have lettuce? I've never heard that. Never, ever heard anybody ever ask me. 20 years I've been here. So, with that, we all can know a new freedom. Just work the program and do what your sponsor says. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Can we have another round of applause, standing ovation for James? James S., everybody. James, thank you. He brought it tonight. Thank you, James. Woo! Okay, a couple announcements, and then we're gonna take a break. And then we have a fashion show tonight. All right, so let's see. Just orders of business. Thank you again to James, and we want to say, okay, there is a meeting tonight at 10:30 p.m. Just a reminder, it's a candlelight meeting, fake candles, but candlelight anyway, in the courtyard here. English speaking here in Valencia Courtyard, Granada Courtyard down the hall is Spanish speaking. Tomorrow there is going to be a yoga class, 6 a.m. in Madrid. Bring a towel or your yoga mat. There's 6:30 a.m. morning meetings, English-speaking in Valencia and Spanish in Sevilla. This is all in your packet and on the schedule. So just another reminder of the boutique will be open. They're having mad sales in the morning. Everything must go. So from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., hospitality will be open. We sold out of the totes, people. Sorry about that at the store, but we still have journals for all that writing for $4. Those will be available. Are we slashing these, too? Yeah, water bottle. So come and get it. And then I just want to point out our new CEA How book sponsoring in. We got extra copies, and that will be there at the literature table. So come on down in the morning. Lastly, a couple more orders of business. So in the morning, we have the morning meetings. There is a Spanish-speaking meeting at 8 a.m. tomorrow. That got chopped off of the schedule, but we wanted to say that is. And your morning workshop, the final workshop, is at 8:15 tomorrow. Can we have another round of applause for our workshop committee and Spanish workshops? That's why we're here this weekend. So thank you again, workshops. And then 10 a.m. tomorrow is our closing ceremonies. Again, all the rooms will open up, and we'll be in here to hear our final speaker and say our farewells. Let's see. So then again, we have... Okay, lastly, just one more thank you to all the individual members that made donations online, in person, to our scholarship chair, and to the LA Intergroup for making such a generous donation. Thank you for making it possible. No one was turned away. Thank you. Okay. Okay, so before our break, we are going to do a tradition that we, it is a countdown of abstinence. So, could I have the whole room please stand? If you all could please stand. Look at you all, amazing, beautiful CEA How people. Okay, so if you have 30 years of abstinence, could you please sit? 29? Okay. It goes the other way. Oh, right. Thank you. So I start with, who can do it? Jay, you know how to do it? Can you come up? No? Rue, will you come? Just tell me where to start. Oh, I go less to more. So if you have 1 day of abstinence, please have a seat. Yeah. No, I'm going to go with the way I started. If you have 30 years of abstinence, please have a seat. Thank you. 28 years of abstinence. 27? 26? 25. All right. 24 years? 23. 22? 20. Right. 21 years? If you have 20 years of abstinence, please take a seat. All right. Counting down, 19 years. Right. Okay. Thank you. I don't know. I'm doing whatever our crazy Hollywood way at the luncheon. So anyway, we'll keep going. 17 years. Yeah. 16? 15 years. 14? 13 years? 12? 11? 10 years? 9 years. Please be seated. 8 years of abstinence? 7 years. Yay. Yeah, give a shout out for your time. 6 years. 5 years. 4 years. 3 years. If you have 2 years of abstinence, please be seated. Amazing. If you have 1 year of abstinence, please be seated. 11 months. 10 months, 9 months, 8 months, 7 months, 6 months, 5 months, 4 months, 3 months, yes, 2 months, 30 days. How about, let's see, so 30, 29 days. How do I get this job? 28 days, 27 days, 26 days, 25 days, 24, 23, yeah, give some applause, 22, 21 days, 20 days, woo, wow, 19 days, 18 days. So 17, 16, 15, 14, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 day. Okay. And so the purpose of doing all this is not to embarrass anybody, but to let you know the newcomer is the most important person in the room to us. We know how hard it is. It's a day at a time for all of us. I have a big book here, and I will get, and then I have another for a backup for someone. So I have a big book that people signed today to welcome. And could I have Jay, could you just bring it over and present the big book? And to the lady, could we have your name? Would you want to come up here? Yes. Hi. You are a newcomer. If you could present that for me. Thank you. Okay. Okay. Sorry. I don't know how to do this. Okay. Just take it over.
There you go. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What's your name?
My name is Madhavi Margo, and I'm here.
Welcome. Welcome.
Standing up if you'd want to come up, and I have a gift for you as well. It's called Sponsoring In. I can give it to you later, too, if you don't want to come up here. But newcomer, most important person in the room, could I have a round of applause for all of us that were here tonight? Okay. Thank you so much, everybody. So last point of information before our break is the raffle tickets have been drawn. They are back here on the back of the room. If you just go to your bag and match up your name, in your ticket, with the ticket that was pulled, you'll be able to get your gift. When we come back from the break, Sheila will be our MC, and we will pull the 50-50 raffle and get the fashion show underway. Thank you, everybody. Enjoy the break. All right, everybody. We are back. Okay, so John McCain, our raffle chair, is going to come on up here for the 50-50 raffle, and we're going to pull the ticket. Oh, yes. And then we just have an announcement. So if anybody that is staying for the candlelight meeting and can give someone a ride to Arlington and Olympic tonight, please see me. Thank you. Okay. Announcement? Yeah, come on up.
Okay, do we have a drum roll?
Yes.
All right.
Yes, thank you, Dave. Woo! All right, 50-50, and it's up to $440. $440. So this winner is going to win.
Somebody who didn't buy any tickets. Well, I got... Jackie's been helping me volunteer here. So anyhow, go in there and kind of dig and stir, and let's have a drum roll here because we got a lot of money here. How much do we got here? Okay. All right, where do we go?
Everyone have their ticket. This is for the 50-50.
And they're not red. They're either white or that off green. And it looks like an off green.
Yes. Sue D.
Whoa!
Who's that?
Oh my God!
Whoa, Sue D. And you only bought one ticket. Oh my God!
Woo! Wow! All right, congratulations, Sue D. Sue D is our scholarship chair. And man, she made sure no person was turned away. Could we have a big round of applause for Sue D? That's right. Okay, so we are going to get our fashion show underway. We just have for the people in the middle area here, what we suggest so you can see the screens if you want to come to the side. If not, you're great right there. You're going to see it live right in front of you. And now I introduce our MC for the evening. Thank you for letting me be of service. Here is Sheila. And yes. And then Hyleen is here. This is our co-chair with Stephanie. Stephanie around? Is she? Oh, come on up here. These are our chairs of the fashion show. We have a round of applause for them. Thank you.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you for being here. My name is Hayleen, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And I'm so thrilled to be here. And
welcome, everybody. Thank you for coming. And this is my first chair. And I hope you all have a great time.
All right. Here's Sheila.
Okay. Good. Yay. All right, guys, so we have a wonderful fashion show. We have 15 people participating, 13 beautiful women, 2 handsome men. So I'm going to give you the little bio, and then we're going to have them come out. So we've got wonderful, wonderful people. Concepcion is starting out for us. Concepcion has been in program and been abstinent for 2 years, lost 20 pounds, and she says for her that the See How program is her lifeline. Before program, her anorexia made it impossible for her to eat 3 meals in a healthy way. Now she can eat healthy and stay healthy at a wonderful weight. She has 3 grandkids that she adores, and by changing her eating, she changed the way she interacted with her children and grandchildren, and it gave her confidence to speak in public and gave her the opportunity to meet and interact with more people. And it has improved her health in a magnificent way. And she recognized that having a disease, only the help of her higher power could arrest it. I give you the beautiful Concepcion. Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Great. Designer. All the jewelry she's wearing tonight, she's designed. She has a 17-year-old daughter who both loves and hates her. And she talks about, I think all the parents out there understand, she talks about how it's affected her life. First and foremost, the daily freedom from constant obsession with food and weight. She no longer feels bad about herself continuously the way she used to. She just celebrated 19 years of marriage, and she can honestly say she's more in love with her husband now more than ever because she's more in love with herself. Here is the beautiful Mindy. Check out her jewelry. She made it all.
Nice.
I want that necklace. Beautiful. Lovely. All right, Mindy. And we have Gris. Gris is the one who gave us the beautiful singing last night. Just that beautiful, beautiful singer. She has a daughter. Get this. She and her daughter were estranged for 6 years, and then she comes in how, gets recovery, puts down the food, and all of a sudden she gets her life and her daughter back. Says she's found a new spiritual way of life and a new way to eat. Her life is better than it's ever been before. Says that she trusts God. She fully takes into account anything that she does and that she knows that God would have her do. She leaves herself unreservedly in God's hands and uses prayer to ask for help every day and enjoys and loves her daughter who's back in her life. Beautiful singing Gris. Come on out, Gris. Look at her. Woo! Pretty, pretty. Woo! She's good at this. Look at her. Lovely. Terrific. Next we have T. T is coming out. T talks about how she feels comfortable in her own skin and it finally fits now. And she accepts life on life's terms. She says that she's committed to communicating and doing what she knows that her sponsor wants her to do. She's glad that she pushed herself and can share anything with her sponsor. The promises she talks about receiving, she's received all of them, she says, and that she's continually adding to her receiving list daily. She's also thrilled to say that she's received and receives life-changing miracles every day, from the smallest of miracles to the ones she only dreamed of. Talks about her relationship with her higher power has changed because she'd never before asked for assistance with food. Now she knows God is that concerned about her, concerned about everything she puts in her mouth. Here we have T. Beautiful T. Oh, look at that beautiful dress. Woo! Beautiful. Isn't she beautiful? Look how pretty this woman is. Thank you, T. And we have Lori. Lori was an agnostic before our program, and today she attributes all the wonderful things in life to her higher power, the beauty, the miracles, the mundane accomplishments, even the difficult patches of her life. She turns to God for all her problems and is always waiting for answers, and they always come. And she talks about how she comprehends the word serenity, and she knows peace often. She intuitively knows how to handle situations which used to baffle her, and she's not afraid to deal with her defects with honesty. She has 6 nieces and nephews and 8 grandnieces and nephews. She used to live in Los Angeles, moved back to Ohio to take care of her mother. She's got a lot of family there who adores her, and they're reluctant to let her go, even though we'd love to have her back. Here is beautiful Lori. Loves the symphony in Cleveland. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Lots of cool things she does in Cleveland. Beautiful Lori. And we have, thank you, Lori. And we have Myra coming up. Myra talks about how she loves running. She's gotten very much into running these days. She has 2 grandkids, probably running around chasing them. She's conscious of the damage she's done to her body and is just so grateful for this opportunity to make amends to her God and to herself by being more active. She tries to run at least 3 times a week, and she did not have a higher power. She found her higher power in program, and it's been very slow, but she can say that the waiting has been worth it because she knows that her higher power brought her here and is keeping her here in program. Here is Myra. That beautiful dress. Look at that gorgeous dress. Wonderful. Look at how beautiful she is. Beautiful Myra. And Maggie. We have Maggie. Maggie's been here for almost 3 years. She's lost 60 pounds. She's in maintenance. And she says the program's important to her because her life depends on her health. She's done lots and lots of positions in program, and she lives a better life now with her family and their work and all her friends. Everything's been affected by program. She lives a true spiritual life, and she lets God take control of it. She has a wonderful family. She has her son and her hubby, and she loves doing Zumba. Here's Maggie and her Zumba buddy. Okay, and we have Lupita. Lupita's been here for 6 years and 8 months, and she's lost 61 pounds. She says that Howe has given her the opportunity to straighten out her life, and she feels peace and tranquility and serenity in a way she never has before. It's the tool between her inner self and the others around her, and that Howe has returned her life to real, real happiness. She's done myriad different service commitments, and she's been an intergroup area rep in Arizona 2 in Arizona and the area chair. Got her health back, and she's so grateful for that. She loves to hike and bicycle, and she has 2 kids, and this is beautiful Lupita. Lupita! Look at how hot she is. This is a hiking, bicycling body. Lupita! Thank you.
Great. Beautiful Lupita. Our next one, I love all these models, but I must say I think this one has the most beautiful name. Her name is Sheila. Right? She talks about how her sponsor is her anchor. She has two grandsons, loves to play tennis. She's also an actor. And she learned how to be a better person here. And she's honest with the food, and she'd never done that before. She's happier. She realized she used to use food as a drug, but she doesn't have to do that anymore. Self-love has been her greatest gift. And she realizes she feels so secure when she turns her will and life over to God, takes that third step, grateful for his plan for her life today and every day. Here's Sheila. You're a great girl. Sheila. And here we have our first man. We have Ernest coming. I know. It's so great. He works the program. He takes it very, very seriously. Goes to 3 to 5 meetings weekly. He's lost 70 pounds and he sponsors on all levels. He's done lots of different service commitments. The areas of growth in his life that he directly attributes to working the HOW program is clarity. When he took his inventory, he had a real closure in his life in terms of his negative character defects. Some of the promises he's received, he talks about no more negative thinking, worry of financial freedom has been lifted, and he has a new serenity, and he has a new freedom and a new happiness. He ran the L.A. Marathon this year in 5 hours. Come on, Ernest. Look at him. 5 hours. Take it off. Start over your shoulder. There you go. Isn't he beautiful? Terrific. Bravo, Ernest. Very good. And now we have the beautiful Roberta. Roberta gave us the wonderful service. She was our wonderful keynote speaker. She was did a wonderful workshop today. She just does all kinds of service in live meetings, in the phone meetings. She's just amazing. And she is a big fan of Bikram yoga. And she talks about how since she can't use flour, sugar, or quantity eating for her high anymore, she has to use her Bikram yoga. She's maintaining a 70-pound weight loss. She's done all kinds, as I said, all kinds of service. And she knows that everything she's learned in CEA HOW has helped her to rely more on her true source of strength, her higher power. She's so grateful that God has done for her what she could not do for herself. Thank you, Roberta, for all you do for us. Come on out, pretty girl. She's going to show us some cool stuff. She's a Bikram yoga person. She's used to doing that in a room that's about 375 degrees hot. So the idea that she can do that in this cool room is amazing. Thanks, Roberta. Now we have beautiful Cheryl coming out. Cheryl has been in program long, long time, maintaining a 76-pound weight loss. She has 2 children. She was a lawyer for a long time, big-time corporate lawyer, and she made a transition, decided she wanted to be a high school teacher. So she is a wonderful high school teacher now, bringing that incredible experience to school. She actually taught at the school where her daughter had graduated. She has 2 lovely children. She's wearing a beautiful dress that she bought to wear to the senior prom at her high school. So she and her husband were truly the seniors at the senior prom at her kids' high school this year. Here we have beautiful Cheryl, and she talks about how that just changed her life to start teaching. Bravo, and bravo to all the teachers out there. Come on out, our beautiful teacher, Cheryl. She's from Boston. She's ready. Beautiful Cheryl. Now we have Maria. Maria is a ballroom dancer. I say we make her take a turn on the floor. She's been doing ballroom dancing for 5 years. Her ballroom dancing partner is here tonight as well. And she talks about CEA How means happiness, and she'd never found this before. So it just gave her a life, and now she doesn't have to do the crazy exercising or drugs or anything she had to do before to try and maintain her weight loss. Right, who's done drugs? Okay, I guess none of us did drugs to maintain our weight loss. But anyway, Maria's talking about how she's delighted she doesn't have to do that anymore. She can do the ballroom dancing, which she loves. She feels like she's a teenager now, even though she's 62 years old, and she's returned to a relationship with God, and she's enjoying a healthier relationship. And again, just loves her life and loves her ballroom dancing. Here is beautiful Maria. Nice. That girl can dance. Nice. Nice. All right. Beautiful. You go, girl. Dancer. Beautiful. All right, now we have our second male of the night. We have Alex coming out. Alex talks about how he loves his sponsor directs him in regard to his food, and he's just starting to develop that relationship with a sponsee, so he's very excited. He's got a sponsor on one hand, sponsee on the other. He's done lots of different service commitments and program, and he says service is important because it makes him feel a part of, and it gets him to a meeting even when he doesn't want to go. The promises are just starting to unfold in his life. More will be revealed. Give him an outreach call if you want to hear about that, he says. And he no longer feels that he needs to control his relationship with people because he lives on God's will. Has a dog named Muffin that he adores. And he's a runner and a weightlifter. Come on out, Alex. Feel like it sound like Oprah. Up to Rachel Ray. Good for you. Good move. Smart move. And our final model of the night, we have beautiful Julianne. Julianne is a lovely mother, has a 17-year-old son. She's been 18 years in program. She has been off sugar and flour for 18 years, so this little pumpkin of hers has never seen her out of sorts. And she meditates every morning for 15 to 20 minutes, and she is absolutely committed to that because she knows it changes her life. And she talks about how that she loves writing her food down for her sponsor and giving it away because she no longer has to think about it. And the promises she's received, she trusts God to guide her in God's will in her life decisions, and she never has to be alone with the disease, never has to be alone anymore. As long as she practices prayer and meditation, she has a connection with her higher power that will help her through anything.
Prayer is her life. Here is our final model, beautiful Julie Ann. Look at that beautiful dress. Our 13 women and two handsome men. Lots of applause for our wonderful models. Come on out, models, all of you. Dance for us. Bring out your inner tart. These are the models from our 2013 CEA How Fashion Show. Collective weight loss for these 15 people, 1,322 pounds. And the beauty we're seeing is a fraction of the beauty that they have inside. These are truly beautiful people. We're just seeing it on the outside. And Halen and Stephanie, come on up for creating this wonderful fashion show. Let's put them in front again. For our beautiful models in our 2013 CEA How Fashion Show. So next year, if you want to be part of the fashion show, we'd love to have you. That was our 2013 fashion show. 1,322 pounds they've lost. Great, 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 great. That concludes our fashion show. Oh, bless your heart. You're most welcome. All right, can we have one more round of applause for the fashion show and our fashion show chairs, please? 1,322 pounds. Pounds and negative thinking gone. All right, everybody, thank you for participating tonight. The only thing left in our program tonight is some dancing with DJ Dave in the house. There we go. Just a reminder, at 10:30 p.m., there is a two candlelight meetings going on. So in Valencia Courtyard is English-speaking, and down in Granada Courtyard is Spanish-speaking. Remember, the meeting's tomorrow, yoga at 6 a.m., meetings, early morning meditation meeting, 6:30 a.m. Thank you for letting me be of service. Let's hit that dance floor. Dave, give it away. Yeah.